Well, thank you so much for being with us. It's great to have the chance to talk with you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, man.
Tell me a little bit about the Effervescent Tour that comes here to New England very soon, just a few weeks, March 20th, the Music Hall in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. What are you talking about on this tour?
I mean, it's an hour plus of new material, and I never want to talk about like what it is I'm talking about beforehand, because that kind of ruins the surprise. But it's all new stuff that you've never seen before on a special or on an album, anything like that. So it's totally new.
How much of a challenge is it to create comedy when the real world is so completely absurd?
I think in a way, the more right now, it isn't even that the world is so absurd. The world feels so grim. And I feel like absurdity in the face of grimness is a form of kind of revolution and relief. So that's kind of what I'm trying to do.
You're a movie guy. If Trump 2.0 were a sequel, is this the worst sequel of all time?
Well, I mean, you could argue it's the worst sequel of all time. However, if the essence of what Trump 1.0 was confusion and chaos and fear, then if anything, this is an even more intense sequel. If you came for Trump 1.0 and enjoyed what it was, then this sequel is even more horrifying than what the original was. It's like aliens versus alien.
You've been pretty outspoken on social media always, I love it when people will chime in and say, do you want to lose half your audience? What's your reaction to people who apparently don't know where you're coming from and haven't been following for the last couple of decades?
Well, I don't, you know, again, I've never understood that argument, because the people that like Trump were never going to like me anyway. So why was I ever going to try to win the movie? There was nothing I was going to do that ever made them go, oh yeah, I want to go watch that guy. Like that wasn't going to happen.
Did I see you filmed a new special recently?
Just shot it last weekend.
And when might we get to see that?
We're starting to edit that in a couple of weeks, and hopefully it will be out in the fall.
Excellent, excellent. I was doing a little research. I went back and reread your wonderful book, Silver Screen Fiend, and my gosh, it's hard to imagine. 37 years ago this July, you stepped on that stage at Garvin's?
Oh, my God, that's right. In July of 88, that was my first time on stage.
You've carved out such a unique career, and again, I'm looking at this from the outside, obviously, but it seems very much like you're in charge of the direction your career goes.
I mean, no one's ever 100% in charge of the direction of where their career goes. There's always really cool cul-de-sacs and shortcuts and road hazards that are thrown in your way that by adapting to them and conquering them, that leads you to new places. But one thing that I do that I kind of have done as far as control is I've maintained a very deep curiosity about things, and I let myself try new stuff all the time. So in a weird way, by being open to new things and rather than try to keep my control from the beginning, that actually gives me more freedom, if that makes any sense.
Oh, absolutely.
By giving up control, you give yourself more freedom.
Have you, I thought this was so great in the book, and I was reminded of it when I went back and reread it. Have you had any recent, what you called night cafes?
Oh, wow. Any recent night cafe? No, I mean, I think my next big night cafe is going to be, I really want to direct something. So that's going to be the next big, like, shaking up my daily schedule and my perception of the world. That's the one that I'm really waiting for.
And that was kind of the plan, right, when you became immersed in film there in the mid-90s, that you hoped by watching all of these films that it might help you become a director?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think a lot of good directors, it starts with just absorbing every film that you possibly can, both stuff that you love and stuff where you're like, oh, I don't like this, and this is why I don't like this, and this could have been better, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I love that.
Hey, away from comedy, can you tell us a little bit about Money Shot Big Bang?
Well, that was a series that Vault Comics put out that this guy, Tim Seeley, Sarah Beatty did. That was their collaboration. And then he just keeps adding new sequels and expanding the world. So I was such a fan of it, and I touted it early on, and we became friends. And he's like, "Do you have an idea of where this could go?" And I actually kind of do, especially based on the way our culture is going right now. So we sort of went down that road and did the craziest, sexiest thing we could possibly come up with.
We're talking with Patton Oswalt here on Downtown. I have to bring up an older film of yours, but well, I loved it so much. And to me, it showed the great range you have as an actor. I love your performance and big fan.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, man.
Well, as a reformed New York Giants fan, I appreciate it. But also, it was, there was a poignancy in that I'm not sure people expected coming in. But to me, we always, we see that a lot with actors that we think of as only comic actors. And I always think it's a fine line between comedy and tragedy, joy and pain. And I think sometimes comedians are able to find that a lot better than maybe other dramatic actors. I look at the work your pal Bob Odenkirk did in Better Call Saul.
Oh, my God. Yeah. I mean, look, a lot of comedy is you are trying to cope and adapt to tragedy, or at least adapt to, frustration with the world. And you attack that frustration and that powerlessness with absurdity. So maybe we are in touch with a lot more darkness. It seems to be that way to me, because a lot of comedians end up making pretty great dramatic actors. So yeah, we must be in touch with something.
Speaking of that darkness, is it wrong that I thought of you when I watched the documentary a couple of months ago about Jerry Lewis's The Day the Clown Cried?
Oh yeah, God, I watched that too. Whoa. I mean, it wasn't a great, wasn't a really well-made documentary. It was kind of all over the place. But you really saw like how he was trying to, again, deal with, but I think that he hadn't dealt with his own darkness before he tried to take on the world's darkness. And I think that's kind of where maybe it went wrong. But I mean, Lord, how the poor man tried, as a friend of mine has said.
Well, and again, you saw the script. You had a copy of it. How, I don't want to say bad. It's not even that it's bad, but how weirdly inappropriate was it?
Well, I used to do these invite-only readings of it in L.A. and
right.
It's not that it was inappropriate. It was that he was... It's that thing of someone thinking that they are trying to help and make a deep statement and just getting it completely wrong. But it has this unspoken vibe of like, you're welcome for what I've just done. So it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, you worked with a couple of friends of our show on that, Paul F. Tompkins and Dave Foley.
Oh, yeah. They were great. They were great.
And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention another friend of our show, native Mainer Tim Simons, and the special moment you had with him in Veep.
Oh, man. Getting to be on Veep was fantastic. God, I love that show. And how weirdly prophetic is both that and his former show, the show right before it, in the thick of it. I mean, he's just... incredible.
Yeah, and that show, I think it reached that point too, where how can you create something that's even more bizarre than the real world?
I do know that they were kind of scrambling near the end once Trump got in and started just barreling toward chaos. They had to like kind of amp up the chaos of their own scripts. Like that's how crazy it got.
I'd have to mention your work on Ratatouille. When did your daughter watch that movie, and when did she make the connection that was Dad?
She watched it when she was super, super young, and just really, really, you know, just loved the movie. And then as she got older, I mean, I think I told her, I'm like, yeah, I'm the voice of that, but I don't think she really understood what that meant. And then just recently they showed it at the New Beverly here in L.A. and we went and saw it together. And she was like, oh, my God, that's she just really, really loved that.
I feel like you've reached that point in your career where people come to you. You know, what's the old line? Who's Patton Oswalt? Get me Patton Oswalt. Get me somebody who's like Patton Oswalt. But I imagine people are coming to you with opportunities now. How do you choose scripts? What's your consideration when you're deciding what to do?
I think one of the big things for me is like when I read something and I go, oh wow, how are they going to pull this off? That's usually a really good metric for, you know, give this thing a chance. If you can't see how it is they're going to pull it off, because then if they do that, that piece of work will be amazing.
Is there anything that you do, though, that gives you the same charge? Obviously not the same immediate reaction that you get when you're doing stand-up.
They're all different disciplines, writing and, you know, working in film and TV, doing voiceover, doing stand-up. You work on different, you work using different muscles, you know, but it all comes from the same creative spark. And I love doing it all. A long time ago, I stopped trying to differentiate between them. They are all different. And I love the difference in them. And I just kind of embracing that difference every time rather than trying to compare and contrast them anymore.
I love the people who say, and this has gone on for a while, oh, you can't be funny anymore. This whole idea of cancel culture, which I don't believe is a real thing. Mm-hmm. And well, when it has happened, it's been it's been the right who's done that more often than the left. It just seems to me that you can't be a jerk, that people don't embrace that the way they might have once upon a time.
I mean, the best comedy always comes from having impediments in front of it, because then you find really clever, wicked ways to get around the impediment. So if everything is allowed, then there's nothing to push against and it's not fun anymore.
I feel like the best comedians, though, rarely punch down. It's punching up.
Yeah, you try to, but, you know, but there's a lot of mediocre comedians out there that like, but wait a minute, I was making money easily. I don't want this to become hard all of a sudden. But again, that's just a way to down the line kind of weed out and root out the mediocre ones that won't last. You know, just like when the comedy boom ended in the late 80s, a lot of just kind of mediocre touring comedians were like, well, this isn't easy anymore. And they stopped, which was good because it made alt comedy and it pushed comedy further and took it into new areas. So maybe that'll happen again.
What's the state of comedy today? We've got more outlets, it seems, than ever before with streaming services and podcasts and the like. Does it make it easier or more challenging to have new voices heard?
I can't speak for younger people coming up. You know, they're dealing with a much different world and a much different structure than I did. I don't know. I try not to think about the overall state of comedy. I just try to focus. I try to focus on being the best and funniest that I can be. That's it.
Well, you keep on doing that in so many different ways, and we'll get to see it here in New England, March 20th at the Music Hall in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, March 21st in Burlington, Vermont, and March 22nd in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Patton, I've enjoyed your work for many, many years. I so appreciate you making some time for us today and wish you well out there on the road.
Oh, man, I can't wait to come to the Northeast. I love that area. Especially during this time of the year, I am very, very excited.
We will do our best to get rid of any remaining snow before you get here.
Okay, thanks so much, man.
You got it. Thanks a lot, Patton.
Okay, bye-bye.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye now.